Hello, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Tonight's creative is perhaps the most adorable author I've ever spoken to. She has a new book called Inside We Stayed for Months and Days. Her name is Lena Mae Turner, and at the time of the interview, she was just 8 years old. I had a wonderful conversation with Miss Lena Mae and her mother, Candace, about children and how they're dealing with the pandemic and how writing this book helped her daughter deal with being in lockdown. Lena Mae also has a website called InsideWeStayed.com that allows children from around the world to share their stories through art, poetry, just any creative outlet as a way of bringing together kids from around the world that are sharing a universal experience. A portion of the proceeds of the book go to the SOS Children's Villages. This is a nonprofit organization. It is worldwide. We actually have one here in Florida that I just discovered. As always, grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, sit back, and enjoy the show. Hi, good morning, or good, is it good evening for you guys?
Almost evening, yes, 6 p.m.
But I'm so excited to talk to you. I read your book and I love it, love it, love it. What, you're welcome. What was your inspiration? Were you just trying to make sense of what was going on and writing a book helped you?
My inspiration is I wrote my book to cheer up other children of the world, to make them feel better so they can't just be sad the whole lockdown. So I wrote a book to cheer them up with a lovely ending, actually a very happy ending, that the doctors and nurses chase COVID away.
That's right. And that seems like that's what's going to happen. That's very exciting with all these new vaccines that they're coming out with. And everybody seems to be lining up to get the shots, to get better, to have some protection from the COVID. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a little different maybe where you are. I know here President Biden has just been a real proponent. That's a big word. He's been very excited to get the vaccine out for people. Is it the same where you guys are?
We are trying to get the vaccine out, but unfortunately, you know, being in a third world country, South Africa, you know, we're in a waiting list for certain vaccines. So we do have a lot of vaccines that recently arrived with the Johnson & Johnson's vaccine, and it's going to the healthcare workers, which is the priority right now, which is very mm-hmm. important. And then there is a phased approach where the president is going to be offering the vaccines to the elderly and the sick, and you know, we're trying to get as many as possible. So I'm sure by, you know, I think a lot of countries are producing the vaccine at an alarming rate as well. So I'm sure that we will get a lot. And I'm just happy that the healthcare workers and that are able to get it. That's the important thing. So those are the people on the front line. Those are the people who are exposed to it every single day and risking their lives. So
right,
that's one step in the right direction.
Right. Agreed. Very much. So I'm looking at your book, and I asked my son, we read it together, and I asked him what his favorite part was. And you know what he said? He said, all of it. He said, all of your book was his favorite part. And it's just, it's something so fun and so good. And I love it because I imagine that there's some child, or even an adult maybe, that is worried, you know, they're so scared. And they see this book and they say, okay, it helps them a little bit. And I think that's amazing. You're 8 years old, right?
Yep, almost nine.
Almost nine. I mean, you're doing something so big that a lot of grownups aren't doing, you know? You're doing something inspiring, something to make people feel better. You must be very proud. And I know Mama must be very proud too.
Very much so. And I think what I was saying to someone the other day, what I think she took away from this book is, you know, you mentioned in the beginning, is having her own understanding mm-hmm. of the crisis, because she wasn't able to go out at all, even when there were, you know, the smaller lockdowns and the schools did start to slowly reopen. She's still not able to go out. So I think her way of making sense of it and connecting with the outside world was to write a book that encompassed all the children around the world. And what's so exciting about the book is that a lot of the characters in the book are real life characters. So little Priyanka is actually a friend of mine's child. And mm-hmm. there's a little boy in Toronto who's, yes, and Raisa, and, you know, but all of these characters are friends of hers or friends of mine that have got children that she spoke to. And I think it's just her way of understanding and trying to bring sort of like a unified message about the pandemic, that, you know, a lot of children in certain countries, the pandemic, the lockdowns were very, very strict. And in some countries, they weren't as strict, but it kind of brought a message to children in the very strict countries, like, look, it's okay. You know, children in Dubai are also in lockdown, and children in London are in lockdown, and Germany, and, you know, all over the world,
mm-hmm.
everybody had some form of a lockdown. And, you know, lockdowns affect people very differently, whether you were in lockdown for a year or you were locked down for a week. It's just, it depends. And I think what was so lovely about the message, and when she started to write the little poems and the little excerpts and send them out to my friends and to her little friends, yes. You love making poems, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that it was a child's perspective that we weren't taken into account of, you know, we kept saying that they've got it, they're okay, they're smiling, they love being at home, they don't have to go to school. And they, we didn't realize they actually weren't understanding it. Even if we try to, you know, as parents, we try and we hide a lot of the doom and gloom from them, but they see it. You know, for example, her saying that, why does the TV say doom in the book? And I realized I watch a lot of news. And while I realized that she may be in another room and she's not paying attention, I thought that she wasn't. She actually is. She sees my panic. She saw my fear. She's heard me talking on the phone about the news and that to other people, especially in the beginning of the lockdown. And as parents, we don't realize that they are exposed to this, but they don't understand it the way we do. We understand that, you know, vaccines are coming and this will happen, and there is medical treatment out there. But what does a small child know about it? They just know, I have to be stuck inside. I can't see my friends.
Right.
I can't go anywhere. This is sad. This is scary. Why can't I see grandma? Why will I make grandma sick? They don't understand that. And I think, you know, her writing the book kind of put it into perspective for a lot of children. I know a lot of my friends said to me when she would write the little poems and the little pictures, they said, please make this into a book.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, you know, it's made my children feel a little bit better, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And that here in America, I think personally, I find it selfish way to think about it. But a lot of it was, like you said, oh, this is a vacation. Kids are going to love it. They can play video games all day, you know, and the focus was, oh, gosh, my kids are home. Oh, you know, it's more work for me, you know, and it was kind of a selfish outlook. And I know personally, it's not a vacation for the kids. My own has had so many meltdowns because he's got cabin fever so bad. He can't, you know, he couldn't go to school. His school closed and they haven't opened up yet. He couldn't go to the outings with the school, the little field trips, you know, to the bowling alley or whatnot. So it is definitely affecting the children. And for a book like this, not only does it say, you know, hey, look, guys, we're all in the same boat and we all miss the things that we're doing, but also on a unity scale, it's girls, it's boys, it's brown, it's white, it's every color, it's every culture. This is worldwide. You know, and it's affecting the children worldwide. So this is amazing. I think it should be in every household.
Yeah. And that was, you know, when she wrote the book, I think that was the main goal for her. And what she loves the most, and she'll probably explain this to you, is that our favorite thing is getting, you know, we get a message or an email, or the publisher will send us some like mail that they received of, and we get posts as well with children from around the world sending posts saying that they absolutely love the book, and they draw pictures about their own COVID experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's almost like the olden day pen pal system. It's created where children are just, they feel connected to her in a way, like, thanks, you get us, you got right. us, like, you understand what we're thinking, you know. And a simple thing like a child missing a pancake, for example, and this little boy that we know, he literally was having meltdowns because every Saturday they go to this pancake place. And he was saying to his mom, we can't go to Mitzi's. And we don't realize as parents, a small thing that they look forward to like that, mm-hmm. what it can actually, it makes you feel very trapped, you know. And I think, in the back, I said, they didn't understand why they had to be locked down, and we would tell them bits and pieces. But I think, you know, for her to get messages from these children all over the world right now, I think it's in 18 different countries so far that we've received mail from, and letters for her and little gifts, and it's really, really endearing. It's created sort of like a snapshot of COVID for children around the world, you know, and this is what we want to try and encourage going forward, is we're going to be launching a site, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that another time, but we're going to be launching a platform where children are going to be sharing this, and they're going to be able to share their COVID experience.
I was going to say, that's what I was going to ask you, if there was a site, excuse me, almost like a, I hate to use the word Facebook, but almost like a Facebook where it's lenamay.com or, you know, .co. And people can be like, well, I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and this is what I miss, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're going to create. It's going to be called insidewestayed.com. Okay. And it's hopefully launching in the next 3-4 days. So this is a preview, we're telling you. And basically, it's just a platform where children, obviously with permission from parents and that, they'll have to sign an indemnity that they're happy with that. But they'll be able to share a photograph, a letter, a drawing, anything that was their COVID snapshot, because nobody's really, you know, we look back on tomes in history and say, this was World War I, this is what happened, this was World War III, or what, or no, whatever. And this is what happened at those moments. But is anybody documenting how children are feeling in the middle of, it's a global pandemic that shut the world down literally this week for a year. Mm-hmm. And has anybody actually said, let's compile the voices and the messages of the children of the world? And that's what Lena wants to do. She wants to create, she's got a little pin board where she's been collecting them so far. But I said, why don't we do something where we create a pin board of the world, and we get all the children of the world to share it so they can look back on it in like 5 years, 10 years and say, hey, that was me. And yeah, it was an interesting time. And maybe other younger children that didn't experience it can say, wow, you know, the kids of those time, that time was so brave. You know, right. I wouldn't be able to stay home.
No, I have gone stir crazy myself. And it's, as adults, I think we have a little more freedom, for lack of a better word, with what we can find to occupy ourselves. We can, you know, maybe hop in the car and go for a drive, socially distancing. We can go for a drive, you know, or, you know, we can maybe FaceTime with our friends or whatnot. And I think you're right. I think the younger generation children have kind of fallen between the cracks. Honestly, I don't know if it's a necessary selfishness on the part of adults, because we are so concerned with, you know, some of us have to keep working. Some of us have to keep leaving the house. Some of us are figuring out how to work at home. Some of us have lost our jobs, and we're so focused on, oh my gosh, okay, I have to pay the electric. I have to buy groceries. The need for survival during the pandemic, I feel like we're forgetting that our kids are literally standing behind us going, ah, you know,
what's going on?
Why are you panicking? You know, it's like, I'm freaking out too, because I have no idea why you're panicking. Yeah. It's like, it's crazy. And it's so important to have something like the book or like your site where kids can go and vent or share something happy that they discovered. You know, even if it's, hey guys, I found this cool YouTube video about blah, 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 you know, and it's, all the kids go, ah, that's amazing. That's so cool. You know, so it's what it sounds like for your site is like it's a little interactive. The kids can share their experience and maybe interact with each other a little more. And you could be talking, well, I mean, you said you're in South Africa. I'm talking to you from Florida, you know, so you could maybe have someone from Vietnam talking to somebody in Toronto. I feel like that in the book is going to open up conversation, especially between children all over the world. I don't remember who said it, but something about learning from a child, learning from the words of children or something like that. We need to look at the kids and see how they're interacting with each other and just maybe get a hold of our own divisiveness as adults, you know, and take a page from their book. No pun intended.
Yeah. You know, and I think they appear resilient. And I think this is something we see as parents. They appear resilient and they look like they're okay and they're enjoying themselves. But when you go sometimes and you watch them, there's things that you see or you hear them speaking to their friends on the phone and you actually realize they're not really grappling what's going on. They don't understand it, you know, right. And as much as we try and explain it to them, they need to be able to discuss it with their peers. You know, she has friends where she can sit and chat to them. I'll ask her and I'll say to her, how are you feeling in that? And then she'll say, I'm tired of being stuck at home, you know. But she'll sit and chat to her friends and then they'll explain to each other what they do. And what did you say? Sorry? Yeah, you can speak. So she'll say that they'll sit and they'll code between each other or they'll play a board game, but just remote board games.
Oh, that's great.
But then she'll be sitting and talking to a friend of mine in London who's got a child, and then a friend in Dubai who's got a child, and a friend in, you know, I've got a friend in the Philippines. And, you know, it's great for them to have that interaction, but I think a lot of children don't have that outlet. They don't have that opportunity. And that's what I hope the site will create, or at least just give them, you know, they'll be able to read, you know, someone else's experience and say, wow, okay, you know, they're also living the same, they're also living under, you know, this lockdown, and their parents lost their jobs. And, you know, I think it gives children a sense of community that they're missing right now.
Right. And not every child everywhere has access to, you know, an iPhone or a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Most households at least have one computer and an internet, you know, or in the internet. Mm-hmm. So they might not have the option to Skype or to FaceTime with friends because, you know, dad needs the phone for work or whatnot. But if there's a home computer that they can get on the site and talk to people about, everybody can read a book. You know, you found the perfect way, I think, to get the message to the kids and set up a platform for them to talk to each other that they might, you know, not every child might have. So that's amazing.
And I think that's what's so important is just it's giving children a voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's her message that she was trying to bring out. I mean, one of the other things that she's doing is we work with a charity that we're supporting, and we proceeds of the book are going to that charity, and they are actually, they have an international, yes, she's busy talking about the children now. This charity, they have a lot of children, they have a lot of, it's the SOS Children's Villages. So they obviously do have a global footprint. So they themselves, we're going to be chatting to them on Monday. Okay. About how, because a lot of these children are in rural areas where they don't have access to the internet, it's about getting not just the books to them, but it's also about, it's getting the book out to them, but it's also bringing the message that, so we're going to get these children in these charities to give their perspective, you know, and I think it's an important perspective that needs to be shared as well. It's not just, you know, your average suburban kid that's stuck in lockdown. There's children that live in little huts in the middle of nowhere and they don't understand what is going on or why there's no food being brought to them at the moment. A lot of charities had to like limit their supplies and they lost funding. And, you know, I think it's a ripple effect. And I think, you know, there's so much more that will come from the story. Mm-hmm. And that's what inspires me, you know, as a mom. And I'm taking up all her talking. She's whispering in my ear. Can I say something?
Oh, you can talk. Go right ahead, Miss Lena May. Tell me all about it. So, Miss Lena May, are you doing school at home? You're doing homeschool?
I actually do online school.
Okay. Is that, that's pretty different than regular school, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
a 99% difference.
Yeah, 99%.
And the 1% is it's cool.
Exactly. So you have your teachers on screen, and then you guys are doing your work at your desk at home.
Mm-hmm. And then they have these sort of like breakout sessions with other children where then they'll Zoom and they'll set up a Zoom between, you know, groups. So where normal children in a setting would have, you know, three or four of them go out in the classroom setting and go and meet in a group and work on a project together, you have them working on it at home.
Well, that sounds cool. Yeah,
which is quite fun. You know, it still brings a little bit of interaction to them. And then they'll sit in there, make new little friends at least. And every week right. the teacher rotates where she puts them with different children every week. So it's, you know, they get to chat to other kids and they'll be online for 2 hours. But I think an hour and 45 minutes is, so what do you do all day? No, what do you do all day?
What's your favorite show?
Exactly.
That's also great to that they're interchanging it, because it can get a little boring. You see the same faces, you know, and then it's like, okay, well, we're gonna have group B from Miss Smith's class join us. And it's like, oh, look at the new faces. Cool. Because, you know, I'm not sure what you do for work, but just staring at the screen, you're like, you know, after like 3 hours, you're like, I got to do something else. Hold on. So I can't imagine for kids. Mine is just doing typical homeschool. He hasn't done the virtual and he hates it. But
you know why? I think because kids learn from one another. Mm-hmm. They love to, you know, and I said to someone the other day, competition is also very important, that where they have their peers in the classroom setting and they're competing with them, that natural competition, they miss that in a home setting. You know, they don't have that. And I think, you know, that's one of the biggest things that they look forward to going back, I think, and just being able mm-hmm. to sit with their friend. And, you know, they teach each other things. If you watch them in a classroom, they teach each other. They listen to the teacher, but they essentially are, you know, I know how to do that. Let me teach you.
Teacher, sometimes I know they do an ocean project, and I listen and then make them understand.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of kids miss. You know, that interaction.
Right, and you and I probably remember being in school and the teacher asks a question and you've got that hand up, everybody's got their hand up and you're like, pick me.
Exactly. And I think and they can't do that now. They have to click a button to put their hand up.
You know, oh Lord.
Raise your hand on Zoom.
No, it takes something away from it.
Yeah, it does. And I said, even if you're the first one to click the Zoom, the little raise your hand button, it's, you know, it's up to the teacher to decide. But I think kids miss that, like, I was first. I had my hand up first.
I clicked the button.
Exactly. She just wants to switch chairs. She feeling a little uncomfortable in this chair.
Oh, you do what Sorry. You gotta do, little ma'am.
Here you go. Here you go.
The other thing I was gonna say about kids being home is that depression, unfortunately, sometimes manifests in ways that resemble something else. Like mine, for instance, he took 3 naps yesterday. If your child is napping and they're usually a go, go, go type of kid, you know, you might want to make a mental note of that and see if it's something that continues on, because their depression or even anxiety as to being locked in or just what they hear, like you said, what they hear on the news, and what it could be that they're, you know, getting into this depression state that, and it's hard because are they bored? Are they depressed? Are they just tired? We as parents really, this has added an additional, I mean, we're watchful already, but I think it's added an additional category of watchfulness.
You know, I read something the other day where I think it was a Swedish study was saying that the impact of this COVID, that not just the pandemic itself, you know, a lot of people, you know, their lives completely changed. Mm-hmm. But I think the impact of children, you know, having that interaction with other children for a year, it's going to have effects for the next 5 years on a lot of children. And it's caused, you know, I see it even with my own daughter, it's caused social anxiety. Mm-hmm. You know, she obviously knows she has an illness, so she is already at high risk. So she's already afraid to go out somewhere. But something as simple as my father will take me to go and collect something and he'll come out and fetch me and he thinks that she'll enjoy it. She'll go for a drive. She literally gets into a panic state to be in the car. And she was a child who loved the car, mm-hmm. you know, and I think things like that, you don't realize, you know, what is going through their mind, why they're feeling like this. And it's causing social anxiety, and it's causing, you know, a fear of germs. Mm-hmm. With a lot of children now, you know, I've got friends that their kids don't want to go back to school. They're afraid that they're going to get COVID and make everybody sick, you know. And I think it's changed a lot in the world. And that's why, you know, messages of hope are so important, and instilling that, you know, it's going to be okay, you know, mindset in them is without the, you know, you can just go run wild and be completely marketless and things like that. But it's just for them to understand, and just little simple things like learning now that they have to wear a mask when they didn't have to anymore. You know, she was used to masks because since she was small, she went to doctors or she went places where we were worried about things, she had to put a mask on. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have an issue with that. But a lot of children, especially kids, that just they want to be free and they want to have to wear a mask, you know, and it's a big adjustment. It's a very big adjustment for children.
Absolutely. And it
big adjustment for grownups.
Yeah, especially for smaller children. It's hard to help them understand, especially when we come out of lockdowns. It's hard for them to understand. It's normal again, but it's not normal again. So it's like almost on the daily, you're having to reevaluate and fix the rules. And also with smaller children, with younger children, they are not as vocal. Adults will complain and vent and tell you that they are depressed. They'll tell you that they're worried about. Kids, on the most part, they seem to keep it inside. Yeah. Until it like reaches a point where they're like, okay, I've tried to figure this out enough on my own. Now I'm going to go ask about it. And at that point, they're already at red alert, worried.
And I think that's what it is as well, is that children, I think you just nailed it on the head there. Children internalize how they're feeling a lot more than we do. And we'll ask them and we'll say, are you okay? But perhaps they just don't want to share it because they feel like they're going to worry us even more, and they can see we're really frazzled.
Right.
So they'll just, you know, say, it's okay, we got this, we're fine. And, you know, they're trying to put on a brave face. But, you know, I think depression is something that we're going to see a lot more of in the coming years now from children that have gone through this. And you had it with the bigger events in the past, you know, children that survived wars, or children that, you know, they've gone through the trauma of losing parents. I think there's going to be a very big ripple effect that's going to come. And I think parents, educators, everybody, I think we just need to understand that we've got a generation of children now that are going to be a little bit more sensitive to the world around us. And we need to create spaces for them.
I think that some people think, oh, well, once they tell us COVID has gone, everything's going to be fine. And I don't think so. I think there's going to be long-reaching effects. Like you said, I think it's going to be, there's going to be a recovery process. You know, there's going to be a fight back to normal. I think it might be a different normal than pre-COVID. I think that there's going to be things that stay in effect. And I think there's going to be behaviors that stay in effect because of it.
Yeah, I think we're also going to have a generation of children. I think I read a study on it as well about children that came out of war zones, and that they have this, they have an anxiety. It's almost like a precondition to anxiety. Mm-hmm. So they permanently are affected by it, and they will have triggers that will come up later in life. And I think there are going to be a large amount of children that are going to have fear of someone dying around them, fear of someone getting a virus. Every time someone, I mean, I'm like that. I hear someone cough and I'm in the pharmacy collecting medicine, and I move 3-4 aisles down because, you know, and it could just be someone just has a, you know, a tickle in their throat, but you become paranoid because you're like, please don't come near me. You know, and I think parents and children are going to face a very, very different world. I think we're just going to have to be kinder to ourselves, and this whole message of you've got this and it's okay and you're going to be fine, it's a great message, but also it's, I wouldn't say it's essentially toxic positivity, but sometimes it feels like it because we're not okay. It's okay that we're okay, and we should be allowed to cry, and we should be allowed, our kids should be allowed to cry because it's a difficult time and they need that outlet. Yes, she said, I can't wait for COVID to be over so we can go somewhere.
Everywhere.
Me too. I tell you what, I haven't been anywhere except the grocery store and the gas station, probably.
And it's
and doctor's offices. But yeah.
We take things for granted, like what we had before. Mm-hmm. And we think to ourselves, I mean, I had friends who'd say, like, please come over and come for visits. And eventually become like, I really don't want to visit today because I'm busy. And now I'm like, man, I wish I visited when I could have.
Right. All of those invites you turned down, you're like, I wish.
And I promised everybody, I'm like, the second that she's got the green light to go out there and she's not high risk anymore, we've got a list of mm-hmm. where she wants to go. And she wants to go where? To the beach? Down to the beach to go and see the ocean. And
Movies.
To go to the movies.
Okay, and the ocean. Okay, then probably go to
and see all your friends and visit everybody. And I think this
not
is
everybody.
A, not everybody.
And I think that's also what we've realized as well, is like, who are, you know, what is important in life, and your friends, and what is, you know, what is not important. I think we've learned that as well, and how to basically live with the bare minimum. I think mm-hmm. that's what COVID taught a lot of people, is that we just need the experiences and those moments back. That's what we need, you know, that, you know, sitting with your grandma and watching TV with your grandma, and my grandma's still alive. And she misses my daughter so, granny, and she misses my daughter terribly, because, you know, my daughter used to go there every week and go and play with her bunnies and feed her chickens.
I used to go when she was away. Where is she again? Durban.
So. Yeah.
My favorite bunny is the blind one.
And she took care of her bunnies, and she has a blind one, and, you know, and she gets very sad. She'll say to my grandma, and thankfully my grandma's tech, you know, we taught her how to use an iPad, so she'll send pictures. Mm-hmm. And, oh, the bunny's fine, you know. But it's just these little moments that you miss, you know.
Right. I miss the movies too, I got to tell you. We live right across the street from a big movie theater, and every time I drive home, I want to cry. I miss the movies.
And it doesn't, it's not the same to watch it on TV, you know. Mm-mm. You know, when someone said to me the other day, like, this Yesterday has just launched, and we get excited, like, okay, let's watch Yesterday on the TV, but it's not the same as going to the movies and getting popcorn. Like, it's probably the same popcorn that you get in the store, but it's still, it's just not the same. And we went to the movies a lot. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah, we used to see everything. There was no film.
And that's what she misses the most, you know. We used to go to the movies a lot, and we used to go during.
We used to get Astros and popcorn and cool drinks, like medium popcorn, mm-hmm. and we used to sit in the highest seat to see everything, because there was a lot of people there, and like I could see the hits.
Yeah,
so highest seat, and we watched like the best movies ever.
What's your favorite movie? That you saw.
Mm-hmm.
You've got so many. What's your favorite movie? A tough one.
Okay, I'm thinking, because it was a long time ago and I can't remember the movies I watched.
I'm telling you. Somebody asked me the other day what was the last movie I had seen, and I said, I don't know.
I think it was Lion King.
No.
Or Abominable.
That was Abominable.
Yeah, that was the
last. No. It wasn't that. We didn't go to the movie.
I know, it's been like a year. Yeah,
it's been so long. I think it was around the time.
I'm thinking, just about, give me a minute.
Okay, we'll talk while you're thinking. Yeah, and I think these little experiences is what kids, we don't realize that they miss so much, because it's just something to break away from. Cabin fever is real.
It is.
Something on the other day. It's real. Like, I don't know how people do it trapped in a spaceship.
I know. Frozen 2.
Frozen 2.
Oh. How could you forget?
Friends, before lockdown, to celebrate Christmas.
Yes, we went to celebrate Christmas with your friends. We went to go see Frozen. Yes. So that was 2019 December.
Yep.
That's a long time ago.
So, yeah. So I think, you know, like I was just saying, it's just having a child's perspective on things, I think that's what makes my heart very full when I see her book going out there and so many children sending messages.
We could probably do something like get some snacks and watch like a movie tonight.
Yes, we can do that.
There you go.
I'm going to watch Yesterday. I don't know if it's come out. It's probably come out there already in the States.
Maybe we can find the movie on Google Play and find the best movie ever. Perfect.
We watched last night, we watched on DVD, we watched the Percy Jackson movie. Have you ever seen Percy Jackson?
What was that about? I know the name, but I don't think we've seen the movie.
Well, we watched both of them, Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. The story is that Percy Jackson is the son of Poseidon. It's all about the Greek gods and their kids. There's a whole series of books. If you like to read, there's tons of books to read. Yeah, we watched that last night. We didn't have any popcorn or snacks, though. We'll have to fix that.
That sounds like a good movie.
Mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, and it's kid friendly. It's got little action scenes, but it's kid friendly.
Oh, we'll definitely look into that. That looks good. And I think she's got over Netflix now because she's literally watched everything on Netflix. Because, you know, you'll say to them, like, okay, you can go watch a movie. And then you look again and, but Mom, I've seen every series.
My favorite series is Garfield.
You like Garfield?
Oh, yeah. Garfield's great. Do you guys have Disney Plus?
Not in our country, sadly. I've even tried to use a VPN to get it, but I don't know. Our country doesn't have the rights yet to have it.
After the interview, after dinner, and you'll probably set it all up and get a couple snacks, like pudding or something.
Mm.
And we get some pillows and blankies and watch a cool movie.
Sounds like a great idea. I'm already thinking like popcorn for dinner.
All right.
Not for dessert. Well, dessert.
And dessert. Perfect.
Well, not for dinner. We have dinner.
Yes.
Now. We can have popcorn for dessert.
Perfect.
Sounds like your night's planned.
Yeah, we don't get Disney Plus yet, sadly, yet, but
that's a bummer. When you get it, talk about watching everything on there because there's so much content. It'll keep her busy for at least a week.
Actually, I enjoy it because I get to watch all the movies that I saw as a child. I get to watch them all over again. And I'm like, oh, I remember this movie.
And they have on the Disney Plus, they have I forget what it's called exactly, but something like classics. And I'm going, what? Like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Bedknobs and what is Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lena loves those as well. My dad
Chitty
got her.
Bang Bang. We watched that long time ago. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, that flying car.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
My dad's a big fan of the old movies, so he got her all the DVDs of all of those. And when she was younger,
still in storage.
They're in storage now, yeah. But when she was younger, she loved them, and she used to sing all the songs. And I think those musicals is what I remember as a child. All the musicals,
right? Mary and Poppins.
I love that they're remaking a lot of the Mary Poppins and Aladdin, and they're bringing them, you know, into as real life characters, you know, that's also great.
Aladdin was amazing.
Yes. And Mulan and all of these, I think these are great. And I love that they changed the narrative to make them more female hero, which is great for me.
Was Mulan at the movies?
No, we saw Mulan.
When we were at home, was it at the movies?
No, it hasn't come to the movies. We didn't see it at the
movies. Well, we watched it.
We watched it at home, yes. Mulan is the one for me that just took the animated to another level, and it just brought the beauty of the Chinese culture and that entire their history. It just brought it to, you know, in a way that Mulan the animator didn't. You know, when we saw it, she was like, "Is that place real?" Like when they go into the palaces and all of that. I said, "Yeah, that was not operational the way it used to be." But
mommy, that's how my favorite movie.
Lilo and Stitch.
That's my favorite movie.
I love Lilo and Stitch. I love, 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 love. Sometimes I don't know if I am Lilo or Stitch, but I think I'm a nice combination of both of them sometimes.
I like Stitch.
Ohana. Ohana means family, right? That's a good thing to remember. And you have made an amazing book that I think makes a Ohana of all the kids everywhere, because we're all in the same boat, right? We're all in the same situation.
Yeah.
Are you going to write another book when it's all over?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hello, what are you working on at the moment?
I'm making a story about dogs that don't have homes, But then finding homes are like a very happy ending. Lots of
spooky. You're going to do a book about dogs and finding homes mm-hmm. for them?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
I'm not going to make it too sad, like that you'll cry.
No, but it'll have a happy ending. That's good. Mom, what charity were you saying part of the proceeds or the proceeds of the book are going to?
The SOS Children's Villages.
That's what I said.
So she chose the charity because she's actually been connected to them since she was about 5 or 6. So she wants to always help in little ways and donate her clothes or her pocket money and things like that. And then when COVID hit, she said to me, what's happening to all those children that don't have moms and dads to teach them at home? And where do they stay? And mm-hmm. And I think it hit home. I mean, I was chatting to the founder of the South African charity the other day for SOS, the South African division. And she said to me, they have about 5,000 orphans now that are COVID orphans because they've lost both parents to the disease.
Oh my goodness.
And I think that's actually going to happen more and more around the world. You know, we see the numbers and we see all the deaths, but we don't actually correlate. Like there's a little person that's left behind dealing with this, like that's going to absolutely not just hate the lockdowns, but hate COVID for the rest of their lives.
I mean, it's almost like someone who lost a parent to 9/11. It's going to be a trigger for the rest of their lives. You're right. I was thinking when you said that you're hearing the reports that orphans due to losing both their parents to COVID, I don't know if it's the state of American media or whatnot, or American social media, either you get a number, 500,000, or you hear my grandpa or my great aunt or, you know, Bobby's cousin was 65. I don't feel like they're reporting on the younger people. I don't know if it's intentional. I don't know if they're not correlating the numbers in that way. But you bring up a very, very valid point. Parents are dying. You know, children are losing their parents to it. And there's so many people, not to get off on a tangent, but there's so many people that still a year later say, it's just the flu. It's not a big deal. Why are you, you know, going crazy about it? Well, we're going crazy about it because people are dying.
And whether it's just the flu or not, it's still killing people. That's what people don't seem to. And I understand why some people go off on tangents. Well, I don't understand. I just, you know, I can get maybe they're just, that's their way of coping, but they don't have to force that ideology. Mm-hmm. COVID is a flu to those people until they lose someone.
Exactly. Or it's a hoax. It's a hoax until they get it.
Exactly. You know, it's a real life. I mean, and I was thinking about it the other day, like they talk about the numbers, but they'll talk about how many doctors or nurses have died from COVID.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those doctors and nurses have got children or families at home? You know, they just become a number. And I think this is what's so sad about it, is that it's just a number, but that's 500, well, I don't know what the death toll is, you know, currently it's just every day. I've actually stopped looking at the numbers because it becomes mm-hmm. too depressing for me. But one death is a death, you know, a death is a death.
One death is too many. Yes.
And that's what the saddest part is, that.
Yeah, I think one of the worst things, and I don't usually like talk politics on the show because it's so divisive, but I will point out, I think the problem I'm having the most in regards to COVID is that it's being politicized. It's like mm-hmm. everybody can get this. It doesn't matter what party you're in. It doesn't matter what your belief system is. Your immune system, your body doesn't care. This virus doesn't care what you believe. Mm-hmm. It doesn't care if your favorite color is blue and his is purple. It doesn't care. It's mm-hmm. not, of all things, of the virus, this coronavirus is not discriminatory. Mm-hmm. It will touch children. It will touch 90-year-olds, it will touch an Asian American, it'll touch a South African, it doesn't care. The fact that people need to drop all your drama, focus on, you know, washing your hands, putting your masks on when you're, you know, you're supposed to, stop fighting it. Just, even if you don't like it, just do it. Who cares?
It's a supermarket. And, you know, I get upset about that when people argue about wearing it in the supermarket. And I'm like, you're in here for 20 minutes tops. Can you just zip it mm-hmm. for 20 minutes and just have respect for the rest of the people that are here. And if you don't want to wear it, then get online shopping.
Right.
You know, then if that's your freedom, then go and express your freedom somewhere else.
Because right.
There are people, you're in close proximity. You know, I was in a pharmacy the other day. I went, you know, my dad looked after my daughter so I could go to the pharmacy with my mom. And there was an elderly couple who refused to wear their mask in a pharmacy. And I was like, you are the highest risk of contracting this virus, and your arrogance, you know, your family are going to be the ones later burying you. Heaven forbid not, they will be burying you later going, how did they get it? COVID was so awful. Well, maybe if they wore their mask.
It's a mystery. I don't know how they caught it.
You know, and the scariest thing is that when you're in a pharmacy, the pharmacy is the place where people are sick and they go to get medicine. So,
right.
You know, keep it together. It's 20 minutes.
Exactly. And not for nothing, but in the grocery store, I'd rather just in general you wear a mask because I don't want your cooties on my apples.
Exactly.
You know? People can't be bothered to sneeze correctly, much less, you know, like they say, sneeze in your elbow, use a tissue, cover your mouth when you cough. People can't be bothered to do that in general, much less during a pandemic. So yeah, at the grocery store, at the pharmacy, where your germs of any sort could possibly get on anything that I'm eventually going to touch, I'd prefer you to just not. Don't do that. Wear a mask.
And my thing is, when I look at that, I saw the other day, it was an elderly gentleman as well, standing in a queue to obviously pay for something, and he took his mask off to cough and blow his nose and then put it back on. And then put it back on. And I was like, oh my gosh, he just defeated the whole object.
Well, you know, he doesn't want to get his mask dirty.
I'm so sorry you decided to spread your germs instead of keep them to yourself.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'll pass. I have sneezed inside my mask so many times. And going back to what you said about you were in the pharmacy and somebody coughed, listen, with COVID, you can't even have allergies anymore, okay? Without somebody side-eyeing you. It's crazy. It's like, you've got a pandemic. No, I am allergic to hay, you know?
I work very late hours at night. So I do a lot of social media management and things like that. So I have clients that are doing work at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm always tired and my eyes always are wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go out somewhere and all you see on my, I don't want to put makeup on because my eyes are itchy or tired. And you look at you in the pharmacy like, what has she got?
Yeah.
You got kind of nailed that. You go, oh, the pink eye is a sign of COVID. Why?
Yeah.
I'm coming here to get eye drops because I sit in front of a computer for 12 hours a day. Pharmacist, like, push it across the counter
with gloves on and a tissue. Yeah. Then they alcohol the counter when you leave.
Step away from the counter.
I cough for no reason. I will choke on my spit and have a coughing fit. And then people are looking at you like, with putting up the sign of the cross and throwing holy water at you. And it's like, there's so much misunderstanding still after a year. There's so much misunderstanding and intolerance. I would put that out there. There's a lot of intolerance.
And I think the saddest thing about it as well is that it became like a stigma, especially in the beginning. And it happened here a lot where people would get, you know, the positive result, and they'd go for a blood test or a swab, and then they wouldn't tell you because they feel, you know, that there's something wrong with them. Like, you know, people are going to ostracize me and I've got the Rona, you know, like they became scared to tell other people. And I think that stigma needs to go away. We don't get ashamed to tell people if we've got pneumonia or the flu, or tell people, yes, we've got it. We stayed at home, and you know, it is what it is. But this fear of telling people, I don't understand that. And then there's a lot of people we had here in South Africa where they would have COVID and then 3-4 days later, they'd think they're fine and they're healthy. And then they go out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going into public and they're not social distancing. And the other night they're going to see family and friends and they're not wearing masks. And they're like, but I don't have symptoms. I'm asymptomatic. I'm like, you do realize you are spreading.
And now 10 more people are sick.
And now 10 more people. I mean, we had a wedding here. Weddings were banned for a long time. And I think you only allowed 20 people at a wedding. And it was in the newspaper, and it happens quite often. There was a wedding, 100 people. one lady at the wedding had COVID. She thought she was fine. She said she's asymptomatic, didn't want to miss the wedding. I mean, heaven forbid you miss a wedding. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the wedding got sick. The entire wedding ended up with COVID, 100 people, because they weren't wearing masks at the wedding. And
well, it didn't match their outfits, obviously.
No, and four people died.
Oh my gosh.
One lady decided she's going to go to a wedding because she doesn't want to miss it. You know, she
so her social engagement was more important than people's safety.
People's safety. And who knows how many other people got sick from those 100 people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exponentially, for sure.
Yeah, that's the scary thing about this virus. It's just people have this idea that they are invincible or immune. Or
they're too good.
Like, oh, I'm a vegan. I'm healthy. I'm not going to get it. My immune system is strong. Well, guess what? I'm a vegan and so is my child, but she still gets sick. Like, it doesn't mean that if you eat certain diets, I mean, yes, it does help, but it doesn't make it baffles me how people are just so, like I said, COVID is just a virus to some people until it affects them directly.
And there's too many people that think that they, for lack of a better phrase, are above it. Like,
yes,
it would not dare affect me because, like you said, I eat healthy, I work out, blah, 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 blah. It honestly doesn't care.
I mean, my mom's telling me every day, she's coming in every week, actually. Sorry, like telling me about this one I know passed away and that one, and this one was only 30 years old. They were healthy and they had no pre-existing conditions. And it doesn't, yes, there are certain conditions that it does affect you more. And yes, a healthy diet does help somewhat, but it doesn't mean because, oh, I'm a vegan, I go to gym, I can walk around with no mask on.
It's not a case of you will or won't get it. I think it's a case of if you get it, how long you will have it, mm-hmm. and how severely you'll have it. My sister, for instance, she has MS, and she and her boyfriend got it. Her boyfriend works out every day. He, you know, big old meathead. He was well after about, say, 2 weeks. She was out of work for 7 weeks because it hit her that hard. And they eat healthy. She has to. She's on the this special type of diet for the MS. Like, I think it's no, like, no red meat, no real dairy. I forget all the ins and outs of it, but she was sick for 7 weeks. Then again, there's people that have it for a week and they're fine. But she was sick as a dog for 7 weeks. Her boyfriend, who had the same thing at the same time, basically just went about his life. He was just having cabin fever for being in the house for 2 weeks. So it's not a matter of when or if, it's a matter of how it's going to affect you.
The doctor was saying to me that majority of people, 90% of people will get it. They just, most of them will not know they had it because their immune system fights it off. But a lot of people, it will affect very badly. A lot of people will get very severe symptoms. But it just depends on, you know, your exposure to it. I've got a friend who's a doctor. She had it twice now. South Africa has our own strain. It's a very different strain. It's getting us banned from the rest of the world. But I think, the US and the UK and Dubai have a travel warning on South Africa now because of our strain, because our strain affects children more than adults, which is quite scary. It just depends on, you know, your body. But she's a very healthy doctor. She's 35, 36 years old. But she got it the first time working with patients and mm-hmm. she got better. She got the second strain in January. She hasn't gone back to work yet. It's now middle of March. Get out of bed. She says every single day it's a struggle to get out of bed. And she's a doctor. You know, she's healthy. And she just said to me, she didn't expect, because everybody said to her, well, you've had COVID, you've got antibodies, and it just hit her like a brick wall.
Right. And I don't know the mechanisms of the virus at all. I know with the HIV virus, it mutates. They would find a medication that they're like, woohoo, it's a miracle. It's going to wipe out HIV. And the HIV, the cells or whatnot would go, what's this? Oh, okay. We're going to change. So I feel like, I don't know, I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor myself, but I feel like, especially with the strains, I'm wondering if that's something similar, if you create the vaccine and it mutates and changes to something else. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a doctor. As much research has been done, I don't feel like nobody knows everything about it.
Exactly. It's way too early to know anything about it. I mean, we still don't even know how to treat a common cold and a common flu.
Exactly.
All these years later. And it's just one of those things. And my hope is that it's going to be like a Spanish flu and disappear in, you know, a year or two, hopefully sooner. But, you know, if you look at the way that it's mutating, it's mutated. There's a version in Italy. There's a version in South Africa. There's a versions. There's different versions of it. It's mutating. My hope is that it mutates and it becomes less the virility of it, almost like it dilutes it. That is what I'm hoping, is that it starts to like dilute the pungency, you know, of the virus. Exactly. At least now we have some understanding of how to deal with it. And I think that's what's hopeful for me, is that, you know, in the beginning we had no idea. This thing hit the world literally a year ago, like a freight train. No one knows what happened. No one knows how to deal with it. No one knew what the symptoms were, because it was like sometimes just common cold symptoms. Mm-hmm. And we treated it very differently. You know, something we realize now, there's certain treatments we shouldn't have done, and there's certain medications that made you worse. And you know, at least we have some sort of a fumbling our way through treatment plan and a vaccine. And, you know, it's a step in the right direction. For me, it's a step in the right direction. And it's a bit of hope, you know. And, you know, I think I heard your President Biden's address the other day, where he said, please just work together, because by 4th of July, don't you want to spend time with your families and all? Just, you know, and yes, there are families who still hang out together and they go and they do things, but I don't like the sense of when you spend time with the family or from a cluster household and you feel that fear, because you start to sniffle and you think, are they sick? Did they give me something? Do they, you know, it's this fear. No one wants to live in this fear anymore.
But at the very least, hopefully this is teaching people to use, you know, good hand washing etiquette.
Yeah, exactly. She emphasizes that in the back of her book. I think in the last page, she says, wash your hands, my dear friends, and stay if you will stay, you know. And I think in, for every day you must wash your hands. And I think this is...
Oh, she knows it verbatim.
Yeah, she knows it. You know, and I think, I mean, even though it's just her and I, she's always washing her hands, because I could be touching something outside. I could, you know, there's so many different... I mean, I remember when I first ordered online groceries and I used to douse them in Barbicide. And then I realized the pediatrician told me I'm actually going to make her more sick from the toxins from the Barbicide. So I had to learn to just...
It's a balance, yeah.
It's a balance, you know, and I think... But in the beginning, it was terrifying, because no one knew, you know, your neighbor would walk past your house and wave at you and you'd be like, please stay away. Please stay far away.
I need you to be 60 feet away. Oh, it's 6 feet? Oh, okay, it's fine.
Stay on the curb. Stay on the curb.
Yeah, wave from your door. It's fine.
And I think there's some people that, you know, like I said, they think they're invincible. And actually, quite funny story is that all the people I know in my industry that think they're invincible in the PR industry and the media industry, and that think they've been invincible and have been going out, and every single one of them has got COVID. And now they've changed their tune so quickly. They've gone and you know, that when December, when everything opened up, they all went out and they went on holiday and they went to the beach and they were all, you know, no masks and selfies. And I was like, oh, wow. And then every single one of them now, they posted those 2 week, I got COVID. Please respect the mask rules. I'm not joking. And it's sad that it has to take getting sick for people to realize how severe it was, you know. And I have a friend that she's got twins, and she couldn't even be around her twins. She's got twin 2-year-olds, and she couldn't even be around her twins for 2 weeks. The husband had to move out the house and go and stay in a hotel.
Oh,
and she was isolated alone and literally was, you know, getting food dropped off by the window. But she really very quickly changed her tune and was, you know, wearing masks. And I see she's still wearing masks, even though we're level one now. She's still wearing one, but she keeps going on about them. So it's sad that it takes people being sick to realize just that you're not untouchable, you know?
Yeah. I think I heard on the news here in Florida that they're opening us up again. And I'm like, okay. But just last week, I know of 5 people that told me they have positive test results. But okay, open it up. So I need to pay better attention to the news, because if that's the case, I'm going to want to be a little more careful. Mm-hmm. But in regards to masks, I think that I'm going to keep wearing one, at least in stores and gas stations. And when I was at work, I would wear my mask all the time for a double reason. Because one, protect myself. And two, they can't see you muttering to yourself underneath the mask.
It's we even changed the way we do makeup. Where we, like, I'll just do my eyes.
Yeah. Great, you don't have to do the bottom half.
I don't have to worry about that.
I love it.
Foundation anymore. It's great.
Just a little mascara. That's it. We're good to go.
And we're good to go. And but I think the most important thing that what we all realize is that, and it, my grandmother said this is what they taught her as a child, was the hand washing. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize how many surfaces we touch on a daily basis and all the germs until COVID hit. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you read all these reports of like, do you know there's more germs on your cell phone screen than on a toilet seat? And I was like, oh, gross. You know, and I didn't realize that. And we touch so many surfaces, mm-hmm. especially as moms. We go in somewhere, we're touching, we take them to the bathroom. We're washing our hands. You touch a door handle, you touch a door frame to hold the door open for them. You touch a paper towel dispenser. We touch everything. We touch everything. Then we're touching our faces and we're driving and we're touching our face. We touch our phone. When COVID hit, I promise you, I that's when I realized just how much I touch my face and how many surfaces I touch. And I think it's given me a big wake-up call about germs because I'm not gross.
I am in agreement with you, and I am just as guilty because I was literally watching one of the first State of the Unions, or maybe it was the governor speaking, talking about wash your hands, don't touch your face. And I'm legit like rubbing my eye watching. I'm like, what? We're not supposed to touch our faces? I ended up getting pneumonia when COVID first hit. So talk about people side-eyeing. I'm like hacking and they're looking at you like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, it's pneumonia. I swear to God. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing is that you don't actually know, you know, when you hear someone coughing nowadays, if they've just got like a normal sniffle or they've, you know, they've got full on, maybe they don't know, or maybe they're not telling you that they've actually got COVID. Mm-hmm. But it's a convention now, you know, we just have to try and stay safe because it's not going to, I mean, the vaccine is going to help and the treatments and that, but it's not going to stop. It's still going to keep moving around, spreading.
Get the vaccine and then just be like, okay, well, I'm going to go play in this pile of dew and then rub my face. You know, no, you still need to wash your hands. You still need to keep that good hygiene that we've learned over the past year.
Yeah, and my father said something so interesting the other day. He said it's just an indication of just how overpopulated the world is as well, is that these germs, they spread, that we're able to spread them this quickly because we're so overpopulated. You know, and we're not, so maybe this is a sign in just how we need to realize we don't need to touch so many things and we need to clean things, surfaces a little bit better. And I hope that stores keep cleaning the surfaces because when I read, you know, at the checkout counter, how many germs are on that little thing that rolls along with your groceries, and you take it home. Now I'm like, put a paper towel down. Let my groceries roll on my own paper towel, you know. It's scary how dirty those surfaces are.
Well, and you know, the credit card or the debit card with the pin pad, the register, at the beginning, it was like it had either like a little sheet of plastic that they took off and put in between, or they clean it between customers. Forget about it. I have been to the store and I'm like looking at them and looking at the keypad going, I just saw that person touch it. You didn't do anything to it.
I'm complacent now. And I'm like,
exactly.
I still spray everything. And I think they get irritated with me, but I don't care. You know, it's just, I went through a stage. I used to even spray the car door handle before I touched it. Like a spray. I became that person. But then I realized I was a little bit eccentric because no one else besides me was touching the car door. I think it's just, we're just entering in a different world now. It's just going to be a very, very different world. And I think it's a big adjustment, but you know, we've had the time to get used to it, you know. And I think I'm just hoping that people's arrogance gets put aside. That's the big thing for me, is that if you don't want to walk around with a mask, can you please have some respect for people that you could make sick? Because you might not know that you have the virus and you're making other people that have compromised immune systems sick. That's the big thing for me because I have a child with a compromised immune system. So I'm just like, please, you may not want to wear your mask. Please have some respect for my child who actually...
Masks aren't new. They weren't hi, puppy.
Say hi. He is a boy.
He's so cute. But you know, surgeons weren't doing surgery just barefaced where their germs could get in. Masks aren't new. You're just fighting against it because why? What is the big deal? Honestly,
when people say you're taking my freedom away, I'm like, you are taking people's freedom to survive away.
Exactly.
Like you were just being a jackass. Like, sorry, excuse my French, but like,
no, you're fine. We allow that kind of conversation on here.
for me, it's just, you know, have a little respect. Like, if you want to live and you think that that's your freedom, then go and live on a farm somewhere and go and live your life with your own freedom. But if you're going to come,
I don't understand the correlation between wearing a mask and it affecting your freedom. I'm not. If you like. If you put on a mask, does that mean that I am going to immediately throw you in jail, comma, take your stuff, comma? Like, how am I affecting? No, the only freedom, air quotes, is of you doing what you want. And that's entitlement. That has nothing to do with freedom. If you have the freedom to not wear your mask, I have the freedom to pop you in the nose.
Exactly. And you know, this is society, how society has been for centuries, where you conform to the rules, and it's not conforming even, it's you respect the rules of a society and being part of a society and being part of a group. And I think this, if you were living in a village somewhere in Africa and you were not obeying the rules of, if they decided everybody had to boil their water 5 times because of cholera and you decide you don't want to do that, they throw you out the village. So
is that something we can start doing? Because that would be great.
Dump all the village idiots. New meaning to the term village idiots. But yeah. I can understand why people say that they can't breathe or whatever in it. Then find an alternative. You know, get one of those. There's different masks. I can't really breathe. I don't like things against my face, so I wear the N95s, which the doctors wear. They have a little bit more room to breathe. Do you see doctors complaining because they have to wear them for 12 hours? No, they don't. Nurses' faces bleed.
Right. And I've had, like I said, when I had to wear it at work, behind the ears, they get rubbed raw. Mm-hmm. No, I don't hear people complaining, responsible, intelligent people, such as doctors, nurses, other responsible, intelligent people. They're not complaining about wearing a mask. The only complaint I have heard was that it fogs up their glasses. You know, I mean,
that's it.
That's it.
And now they've made fancy ones now that don't fog up your glasses. But I get them and then people complaining because it doesn't look good. And I'm like, who cares? Like, it won't look good when you're hooked up to a ventilator. So just, you know, read about this for hours. I mean, and I think it's because I have a child with compromise. My thing is, like, the sooner people stop, you know, accepting and wearing their masks and stopping the spread, the sooner my child can actually go out and have a life, because she's been locked up for a year, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't trust that I can take her out, because there's always going to be one idiot who's not going to wear a mask, and the risk is too high. And because she has autoimmune, there are just too many horrible cases. I'm sure you've seen it in America, where children have, you know, passed away from it because they had autoimmune diseases where their bodies literally went into full Kawasaki syndromes, shut down, destroy the brain. And I'm willing, and the mom, to, like, you know, take that risk. And people say, but you must get used to other germs. No, not really.
No, no.
You know, we're content and we can stay home, and it's as boring as it is. I'd rather live.
So, exactly.
And there's people that are living in worse conditions than we are. They don't have Netflix or TV or running water, and they are isolated, you know. So,
and you know what? I bet they're finding stuff to do, those kids. I bet you they are. They're creating, they're building, they're doing something, they're writing.
Yeah. There's so many children out there that are finding new ways of keeping occupied. And I think that's one of the good takeaways from this as well, is that they're realizing. Maybe the one good thing of COVID I could say is, if there's such a thing as a good thing of COVID, but I think it taught us as well how to be alone. I think that's also an important thing for people. We had to do some soul searching. I think it was a year of learning a lot about ourselves, you know, as people. And it was a scary lesson to learn, because a lot of us don't want to be alone in our own thoughts. It's easier just to keep busy. But, you know, maybe it was a reset that we needed, you know, and we started to look internally, but also around us in community and what's important in the world.
Or to continue to learn how to keep themselves occupied where they're not dependent on social media or they're not dependent on going out all the time. Write a book, make an album, draw, teach, do something, be creative. So yeah, you're right. If there's one good takeaway.
And it brings hope. Sorry to interrupt you there.
It's fine.
Part of the human condition and what makes us human is our ability to create, mm-hmm. our ability to bring new and exciting things into the world. And I think, having the platform that you have to be able to showcase that and to talk about that, that's so important. Mm-hmm. It inspires us to create again, because I think we stopped that for the longest time. We just became consumers. And what makes us human is our ability to create, even if it's something as simple as, you learn to bake or cook, or it's still creation. You're making something and you're bringing something into the world. And I think that it's almost like an accomplishment. I know when she finished her book, that sense of accomplishment that she had, and then she gets this motivation now to do it again and do another one. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that's so important as human beings, that we need to start doing more of, creating,
right.
doing things. Right. There's so much that we can add to the world. There's so many amazing things we can still bring that are unsolved that we can try and solve. I saw an article the other day, a little girl from Mexico, I think she was, she created a water purification system, and she's like 9 or 10.
Wow.
And she created a water purification system while she was in lockdown. I'm like, what?
People, I'm going to say humanity in general, we take, and we want instant gratification. That's why we don't want to wait a week between our shows. We want to binge it on Netflix. We want things to be given to us. We want consumerism, but we need to start giving. We need to provide. And you're right. I think this is something, if there's good to come from this, I think it's that. I think it's learning that we are not the center of the universe. Second of all, we need to give more than we take. Mm-hmm. We need to provide rather than just procure.
And you feel so much better when you're putting something out there in the world that's only yours. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need, to get that motivation for ourselves back. I'm sure you felt that when you started this platform for yourself. You felt, okay, I'm doing something that's actually, I'm inspired and I'm inspiring others. Like, I think we need that mm-hmm. as humans. We need that hope, that positivity, that inspiration to be put back into the world, because I know when I turn on my phone in the morning, it's just news, 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 news. And the TV, it's just negative, negative,
mm-hmm.
negative. Take, 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 take. And you almost feel like, what's the point of this world? What's the point of me being here? But there's so much out there that we aren't exposed to. And like, look at us. I'm sitting in Johannesburg in the middle of South Africa, probably 15,000 kilometers away from Florida, mm-hmm. but we're able to discuss something that affects us both. Our experiences are slightly different, but they're also very similar. And I think this is what I think, if anything, COVID has taught us, is that the world is a big community and we need to connect more with it. And we need to understand our neighbors and understand the people around us. Mm-hmm. And we need to learn from more people and give, sharing is a case of giving what we have, but sharing a piece of ourselves. And that's what's so beautiful about being human is a storytelling. I mean, that's what, in Africa, that's how history was passed down. Mm-hmm. Through storytelling. And I think that's been missed. And, and I love that there's these opportunities for podcasts, and that, I think I'd rather sit and listen to podcasts than music these days. I don't even have much new music on my playlist. It's all just podcasts that I tune into because I'm learning something, or I'm sitting on what's the other new app? Although sometimes I listen to the people and they talk above each other.
Clubhouse.
Clubhouse, and I think these platforms came about, and there's a reason, because we should be sharing. It should be community, each other. We learn so much from each other as human beings, mm-hmm. We learn, even if we're in disagreement, I still go away if I listen to a podcast and I disagree with. I go away and I go, maybe that's just my own cognitive dissonance. So maybe I need to go and research that. So maybe I was rejecting it because maybe there's just something internally. And then I realized later, I need to take other perspectives into account, and it's just me learning. I mean, I listen to podcasts that are just random rants, and I listen to podcasts that are funny, and I listen to podcasts that are very like in-depth, informative. And every single day I learn something new. I feel like I'm back at university. I love it. And I feel like I'm sitting, you know, in a university, you know, on the quad, and everybody's having these debates between lectures. And it's, for me, it's brilliant. And like you said, it was sitting in a coffee house and people are sharing. We miss that as human beings. We become so insular, yeah. And then we have our little circles and we stay in our little circle. And then we don't share much in our little circles. I mean, I have friends, I can't debate with them about certain things because they have their own way of thinking, and then they'll shut me down and then it ruins the friendship. So we have discussions where we know this is off limits, this is off limits, this is off limits, you know, yeah. And then I want to talk about those things and I can't, you know, and I want to learn more. And if that's what I love so much about the whole podcast world, you know, and I think that's
hi. She's like, you guys have been talking all this time.
Yeah, she's like, Mom, this was my interview. Why have you shaken
her? When we talked, it was almost evening. Now it's night time for us.
Oh yeah. No! Does that mean it's supper time?
Yeah, I think she's like got
she's
the
like
little...
hint. And Miss Elena may wear, she's got to. I know she's starving. She's probably pulling on your shirt like, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
There yeah. She is.
Hi.
She hears her name.
Yay. She's like, I'm here. But it was really enjoyable talking to you guys. I love it. And I love the book. And thank you. If you want to email me the link to the charity so I can promote that when we do the show. Okay. And where can everybody get your book, Miss Lena May?
Where can we get it? On Amazon.
Amazon. What does cheap mean?
No, then they have all the bookstores, or mostly the bookstores in the UK have got it, and in South Africa. But at the moment, because a lot of bookstores in the US, you know, they went through a really difficult time. They didn't have, you know, a lot of bookstores closed. So it's mostly
Amazon.
Online.
Okay, can I Amazon. Talk? Can yeah. I talk? So online Amazon bookstore, my book.
So it's in Amazon in the States at the moment, but I do know that they're going to have it in a couple bookstores in the New England area, what I heard. But I think Amazon's just the easiest for everybody because it just, you don't have to go out and it just comes straight to your door.
It's Inside We Stayed for Months and Days by Miss Lena May Turner.
Stayed for Months and Days by Lena.
What did I say, Lana? I'm sorry.
No, you said it correctly. You said it correctly. Actually, you're the first person that's interviewed her that asked ahead of time how to pronounce her name, and you've actually said her name perfectly the whole way through.
And this is my longest interview ever.
Oh, my. Well, next time I'll call back and we'll talk for 5 hours, okay?
Even better. But we'll make sure I feed her beforehand.
feed her beforehand and have a movie ready.
Yeah, you're always hungry. I don't know if your little ones like this. When they're at home, they eat more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's standing off camera right now, like looking at me like, look what time it is.
So, yeah, you got the same story. Like, feed the kids.
I don't know if you can see it, but he drew a picture while he was waiting.
Next book.
Oh yes, he says that can be your next book. He likes roads and he likes I forgot what they're called, traffic lights. So we'll have to work on that.
we call traffic lights robots in South Africa. So it's the weirdest thing. I don't know why we call them a robot.
Because a robot.
So they will be like, the robot is green or the robot is red. I have no idea why. It's
that's
robot.
Crazy.
Orange means slow down. Red means stop. Green means go.
And we call them a robot.
They call traffic lights robots in South Africa.
It's the strangest thing. And we call a traffic circle. I don't know what you call them in the States. Traffic circle.
A roundabout.
Yeah, we call them like a ring road or a whirly twirly.
A whirly twirly.
So that's actually a good idea. A book about what kids around the world call different roads. And
there we go. You hear that, Lena Mae? That's going to be a book for you.
And your son can illustrate it.
Ooh, he's excited. His eyes are like...
We'll talk to the publisher. I think that's a good idea.
Absolutely. But I had one more question for Mom. Miss Lena may just made me think of it. Are we sure that orange means slow down on the robots? Or does it mean speed up a little bit?
Slow down.
Oh, slow down. Okay.
Quickly
go. If it was speed up a little bit, it would be like a very, very, very light.
Okay. It was wonderful talking to you guys. Go eat your dinner and enjoy your movie. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Bye.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, happiness to you.
Have a nice day.
You too, babes. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.